gonna try to keep my laughter.
Hello. Welcome to The Dementia Experience. Here I am, Clara Hebblethwaite, with the brilliant Edith Tankers. She is a fantastic, award-winning theatre artist and clown, and she's also done masses of yoga teaching recently and all sorts of other fantastic things. So hello, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me. I think it's also yoga teachery is also a good way to describe it. Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Pleasure. And Edith, you live locally, but originally, where are you from? Tell us a bit about your background.
Originally, I am from Toronto, Canada, and I moved here about 17 years ago. Almost, I can't even believe I'm saying that, 17 years. And I was... I was like a mail order bride. I was like 7 months pregnant. I literally came with two suitcases and moved out into the middle of the countryside. I didn't even know how to drive on the other side of the road. So fully pregnant and do I say that without a driver's license?
Yes.
Yes. Do I start this interview with that story? I don't know. Yeah. So
crumbs, a real culture shock.
Yeah.
A real.
Yeah.
Like,
real shift, real change.
Wow.
Yeah.
And none of your family obviously were over this way.
None.
And your parents are still living in Canada.
Living in Toronto, yeah.
Crumbs.
Yeah.
And for your career, you had already begun things, your theatre and your writing. You've done some writing as
Yes.
So that had already kicked off.
Yeah. I mean, I was, for a long time I was touring, working with other theater companies. And then I always had this kind of a theater show for young audiences and family audiences that was kind of clown and comedic and went in festivals and schools. And then I started working with theater companies here, primarily Knee-High. And it was there that I first met my husband. We just talked about this word. We don't like saying the word husband. We're looking for the right word. It's my boyfriend or, I don't know, do we say...
Booty call.
Booty call, lover on the side, ring the bell when I need. Not that kind of thing, but, you know, friend, partner. Oh, even partner in crime. It just sounds so...
It's so gross.
Yeah. But anyhow, that's how I met him. And and then, yeah, that was it. It was sort of me figuring out how to be where I was and immediately thrust into family life and the life of children, which, to be honest, I wasn't even primed for as a young adult or an older adult.
Wow.
I was, quite independent, touring all over a lot of the time and hanging with fellow artists. So this was, in that way, it was a culture shock as well.
Yes. But like an extreme one.
Extreme.
As you say, suddenly, it was all or nothing.
I don't know why it had to be that way. It was like a yanking. You know, when two dogs are fighting, you're supposed to pull from the hind legs. It's almost like I had to be pulled from the hind legs from that kind of life into this, a different one, really.
Yeah.
Really different.
And you've massively adjusted.
Massively. Yeah, and still always kind of finding my way, still finding the ways to reinvent, reconnect, as a parent, as a mother, you're always figuring out how to create a life around the needs of your kids. So
yes.
That's sort of what it's been like for that amount of time. Yeah.
And they are ever changing.
Oh my goodness.
Up with that vibe and knowing as we do about dementia, Alzheimer's, keeping up with them and being so willing to go with the flow, so willing to just tweak things on the spot.
On the spot.
Very intense.
Yeah.
Way.
Yeah.
What's the connection for you with the theatre? Why is the theatre so important to bring people together and to bring people to life, to kind of get that ability to find some way of expressing themselves creatively?
Do you know, I feel like I have six answers in that one question, and I don't know if I'll even answer that question properly or in the right order. But, my mum was diagnosed with dementia back in Toronto around 2015, 2016. And I was working at the Globe at the time, and it was quite, a very ferocious schedule. And there were 6 days off, and I had to fly back to Toronto to deal with what my father was dealing with, which was, afraid that she was going to lose her place in, the queue for care facilities. And the care facilities that are subsidized are not all that. So I had to visit her there and see that this was not the place. So in kind of the fits and starts and the mistakes and the back and forth, figuring out the best way for her to have care, which was at home. And we were fortunate enough that we found someone who'd be able to be at home. The evolution of her Alzheimer's has changed, as she transitioned, and maybe this might be a familiar story, transitioning into this different state of being. It was quite rough. She was quite aggressive. She was quite, difficult. And my father bore the brunt of that a lot. But strangely, over time, and this is over time, the peace, the happiness, joy. That's in large part because she's secure with my father, and this is also something else that we have to ready ourselves for, that change will happen yet again. But meanwhile, that's happening very far away from here. I'm like thousands of miles away. And I was working at Battersea Arts Centre as an artist in residence as well. And one of the producers I worked with, an amazing producer, Shelley Hastings, she began work with a dementia arts charity. She's a writer as well. And this was in London. And she asked me if I could come. It was kind of experimental because it's wanting to see what are other ways of expression for people with dementia, meaning they work closely with a choir, with Wigmore Hall. And so that was very well organized, well funded, and kind of bulletproof in a way. But it's harder to figure out what is another mode of expression. There's definitely with their hands, using their hands, making, with clay, with paper, with paint and drawing. But the world of theater, which is about using your body, your mind, your voice, how do you present that? So it was a long period of experimentation. It was a short contract that became a longer contract, which was fantastic. And it was the beginning of a launching off for me to understand how I could continue to evolve offering. And it was originally movement-based, and now it's far more connected to the idea of joyful connection and being present, using our bodies, using our minds, using our voices, wherever we are in the state of our cognitive awareness or cognitive decline, wherever we are. So it's just as much for the carers as it is for the people experiencing dementia.
That is so key. So often the activities or groups that are being run are purely focused on those with dementia.
Yeah.
When actually they need to be in tune with each other, both the carer and the person with dementia. And it gives them both a chance to unravel, express, relax. So it's got to be, a different offering. That's what you seem to be providing, something that everyone can tap into and love.
Yeah, that's it, that everyone can participate in. And there is something as well to coming out into the community, where when somebody gets a diagnosis, they're reeling, their family is reeling.
Yeah.
And there's a measure of, you've got to gather yourself. Mm-hmm. And there's a measure of kind of closing in or closing off. If people are lucky to have a really strong family network, that doesn't necessarily happen. But for those that are, isolated, and even their families are isolated, to be able to come out into the community, network, but also experience the practice, like any muscle, the practice of connection and connectivity. And doing that through song, movement, the energetics of connection and exchange, text, poetry, Shakespeare, dancing, just having a party. All of that is something that I've been told that in a way we need this every week. Every week we need this muscle worked. Yeah. And I just thought, oh my goodness, yeah, absolutely.
So it's like almost being a personal trainer and someone comes to you once a week to work those muscles.
Exactly.
And if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah.
And if there isn't a strong family, you know, network surrounding them, there will be a carer or a care home or someone, some way there. And as you say, if you're out in the community, they just bring themselves to you. Yeah. They come to you. They know it's going to recharge their batteries. And the difference it makes afterwards, after one of your sessions, do you get feedback kind of from households that tell you how
And you know, the feedback can range from, you know, thank God, this has been a lifesaver. We just didn't know. We just didn't know that we could do this. We didn't know that we could play.
Yeah.
That they're still playing.
Yeah.
They get that to, that was a bit tiring.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You get the gamut of it. And I think it's also important to note that whatever creative expression you participate in or you're facilitating, that you don't know necessarily what's going to happen.
Mm.
So that's also part of the challenge and the intricacy of it is you will have people who either are newly diagnosed or people who have plateaued, or you will have people who are later in their diagnosis who are nonverbal or non-mobile. and you have to accommodate that. Yeah. And it is hard because there are expectations and you always have to, in the moment, let the expectation go. And the learning for me is also finding a way. These are simple. They can be simple, but they can be absolutely transformative. Really simple games. Mm-hmm. I look at them like a theater company in a way, and how we can create feeling in a group, how we can work together as an ensemble, how we can work in pairs or sharing alone in front of an audience, that sort of thing. But you don't know what they come in with on the day.
That makes it so exciting. They've almost got their own script. And then even if they have arrived with a script of some sort, i.e. a life story or whatever it is, or a feeling on that in that morning, in that moment, actually it all gets ripped up anyway, because once the electricity begins between them and others. So it's all fantastically unpredictable, fantastically flexible.
Yeah.
And I
with
love
the structure.
There is a structure. Yeah. So you set the scene and then play takes place.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And it is, you know, and it really, but I will always say it's not a bulletproof thing. It's never bulletproof.
No.
You know,
no.
So and I have people who will share with me afterwards what's going on in their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, for example, a carer, a spouse, is saying that, you know, it's starting to go downhill. We are now seeing the obvious decline. It's been hard on me, on the carer, and their partner's been discombobulated or more confused. And that emotional toll that it takes is so heavy. And in our everyday lives, we're fortunate enough for the time being not to experience that. But at some point, we're going to experience something very similar to that in one way or another. So to hear that being shared and to say that when they come into the group and work, so particularly with me or with other artists, but when they come in, you know, in the land of playing, they feel free.
Yes. Yes.
Free from that and can find, even in that, their moments of joy and moments of connection. So
So, yeah, I've often thought about Alzheimer's and dementia as sort of like extreme aging, you know, even when the early onset group, you know, in their 40s or 50s who have it, it feels like everything is just being fast forwarded radically. All the learning has been lost and they kind of go back to that instinctive stage of almost, you know, the very early stage of life, you know, before they learn to put their shoes on, before they learn to get dressed, etc. And so, yeah, like play is the first thing a kid wants to do. And whether that's it's it. The rhythm, thanks to the beat of their heart, that they want to beat the drum alongside, or the play mucking about, you know, like a kid would in a playground. Yeah. Like that's so essential, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if they're being dismantled as the disease, you know, takes over the brain,
yeah,
then play is really essential. It's what they're left with.
Yeah.
And their sense of humor is always extraordinary. That sense of abandon, you know, and carefree.
Incredible.
And they remind us, don't they, that like, as you said so brilliantly, those tiny things can make such a difference.
Yeah.
Like, keep it simple. Here we are trying to really overcomplicate our lives with all sorts of ambitious desires and swimming pools and, you know, like
the swimming pool. I wonder what you think about in this heat here.
It's always been a swimming pool. That's like my dream. But actually dismantle all of that and you're left with the essence. So that generation, this generation, our mums currently, through their Alzheimer's and dementia, they're teaching us to scrap all of that, to, you know, ditch the pool, just hop in the puddle or whatever it is, or suck on an ice cube, or, you know, somehow find a way. But yeah, essentially keep it playful, keep it joyful, keep it free.
Yeah.
What
we do. We do overcomplicate in our lives. And, you know, I think, you know, it's really interesting because with my own mother, who I get to see maybe twice a year, maximum, only recently it's been maybe three times in a year. But, you know, she used to be a complicated bird. Like, there used to be a lot more up and down, a lot more stuff happening. And for whatever reason, however the Alzheimer's manifested, it manifested in such a way where she's more level. And what came out is this two things. One is her lexicon has shrunk down to, I love you, you know, it's continuous. I love you.
Sweet.
You know, laughing, smiling, whatever. It's so nice to see you. I love you.
Yeah.
And also she's quite biting and funny, you know. I did a Zoom call with both my parents, and she usually sits quietly, comfortably, smiling beside my dad as my dad is talking. And I forget what the question was. You know, I asked whatever, how are you, for example, and he started to go off on some tangent, and she's still with her smile, thinking that, you know, she couldn't be seen by the video camera. She's like, you're starting to get very boring. You know, she's giving him the hint, still smiling to the camera. Shush, quiet. Why don't you listen better? You know, like she's whereas in the past, I don't think she had that sort of peace to really receive what was happening.
Yes. Yes.
And also, and I know this isn't a forever thing, and it goes, and it will go. But these strange kind of pearls of wisdom from someone who rests a lot now, you know, but out of nowhere, I would say, oh, I'm not sure what's happening with my youngest so-and-so. He's kind of behaving a bit strange or funny or blah, 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 whatever it is, the normal kind of parental, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with your children. And she said, have you hugged him lately? I was like, what? She goes, the only thing you can do, give him the hugs. You know, and it's like these pearls of wisdom. Now, of course, in the moment, you're like, I'm going to go up to your room, whatever it is. But the truth, ultimate truth is that.
Yes.
So something is happening in this evolution towards a closure. And while the tendency is to say it's horrible, it's all bad, it's a nightmare. That's not the case. It's not the case. Gosh, it's so varied. The experience is so varied, but it's generally not the case. And in some, if not most instances, it might not be the case.
Yeah. And even when it is the case, when the storm does take place, even within that storm, there are those nuggets of joy.
Yeah.
So it's sort of training ourselves as the daughters or partners or relatives of those people with dementia to just hold on to those and hold on for dear life and remember those bits, not the storm, because it's too obvious, isn't it? It just feels too obvious to say dementia is a disaster. It's so depressing. It's so distressing.
Yeah.
And then it's a full stop after all that.
Yeah.
Whereas if we say, yeah, it can be crappy in lots of ways, but then there's a comma, then there's a dot, dot, dot as you readjust, regroup, accept, and then you find whatever makes sense.
That's it.
To get those nuggets.
And I think you're hitting it on the nail because I think, okay, I'm going to do this a segue into funding. But in terms of funding, I also think a lot of funding, council level, federal level, there's a lot, understandably and needed, funding that goes towards children.
Yes.
But there isn't the imagination or the understanding of how crucial funding is to go towards people who are aging.
Yeah.
And people who are facing isolation and people who are facing dementia, you know, and their families.
Yeah.
And that is a missed opportunity, really missed.
Yeah. And to double up the funding, to fund both ends of the circle of life, you know, to give the cash to the kids and the Silver Tops and somehow or other blend their projects. So you would be doing Shakespeare with the little ones and the older generations.
Absolutely.
Because we know that immediately releases playful feelings between the two.
Yeah.
And kind of give us middle generation a bit of a breather, you know, allow them to sort of do the legwork together.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. The funding automatically in most of the books and most of the support is for the kids.
Yeah.
And it's like grannies. Oh my gosh. They've read to the kids. They've gone into those schools and done it for them. Why aren't we giving it back, you know, in the same way?
I think somewhere there's this kind of collective, is it fear or collective sort of just wanting to be in denial of where, if we're lucky, we're all heading.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We don't really want to know about it.
Yeah. People look away.
Yeah, we look away.
Yeah.
And I get it. We get it, you know. But it's you'll miss the golden nuggets of what that is and what that experience can be in you know, in fully embracing, actively participating and joining in with this stage of life. And with this particular, you know, neurocognitive decline.
Yeah. And if the groups and the support and the networks are so strong and fun and joyful, people are going to want to catch dementia. They're going to want to have the diagnosis because they'll be like, that means I can join the Shakespeare gang and do fun stuff with Edith.
Well, yeah. I don't know if it's that extreme.
But if that end of life was supersonic, if it really was a Marigold Hotel experience, if it was joyful and uplifting and, you know, well-funded, then it wouldn't be that awful dread of the diagnosis of like lock, lock, double lock in a care home. No, it would be, aha, that means you've got access to opera singers, theatre, you know, all sorts of good time, fun stuff.
Yeah.
And you would relish, you wouldn't be fearful. You would be excited to age rather than dreading that stage.
Yeah, because it's care.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's care and attention.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes people don't go their whole life without the opportunity to creatively express.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's through making and clay and music and art or performance, whatever it is.
Yes.
Without being able to feel themselves being seen.
Yes.
And everybody wants to be seen.
Yes.
And especially when you're aging, and we know this as as you get older, you go, oh, I mean, it's the template of female aging, mm-hmm. Stereotypical one of, you know, we just become invisible.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep marching into parties and no one turns around. It's like, I've arrived, dipsticks. 10 years ago, you might have swiveled. Why is no one looking up from their phones?
How much more personality do I need to have? What do I have to develop? Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah, there is that invisibility, definitely. Rather than putting those glorious silver tops on a pedestal and saying, you guys have done unbelievable stuff during your lives.
Yeah.
We are celebrating you.
Yeah.
You know, and
you have lived a life.
Yeah.
You have been a carer yourself. You have been a parent yourself. That might have been, you know, the joy of your time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or you might have been a philosophy professor, whatever it is. Yes. And there needs to be a reckoning. That's the feeling, is there needs to be a reckoning. And it will only pay in dividends in the end. Is that the right word, dividends?
Oh, yeah. I think so. I don't know if it's to do with the tax return.
Very taxy, yeah. I don't know if that's the right dividends.
But it's true. And in the East, they seem to have it sussed. It's only in the West that it feels like we turn away.
Whereas, why do you think that is?
I don't know. I wonder if the family structure is just stronger and they live together way more and we've all started to divide up, you know, moving countries or living separately, not intergenerationally under one roof. I'm not sure, but there doesn't seem to be that sort of, yeah, that real kind of glorifying of the aged.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. They are just kind of, but not heard or not even seen anymore, not even, you know,
yeah.
So they just would then go into that kind of vegetative state, separado, head down.
Yeah. Faster.
No. Yeah. Faster.
Yeah. Much faster.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, you're right. A reckoning, a revolution, a reboot of some sort of society's view on those silver tops who, boy, oh boy, release stuff in us. Like when we do those activities, mm-hmm. when you do your theatre, do you feel like invigorated and ready to take on the world after?
Yeah, I feel that there are many different experiences. There's not one thing, but I definitely feel like something has happened that is quite deep and quite connected. And we are in whatever beautiful room we're in, and it's shared amongst us. It is, and that's the thing, is that the more of these beautiful little rooms that we can have where people have a transformative, joyful experience, where they encounter themselves, they remember themselves, and not in, I remember what I did 20 seconds ago. No. But they remember their own spirit to engage. That's it.
Yes.
That's it. That's magic. So that's what I feel while I'm plate spinning and going, oh, so-and-so is not talking today. Or, you know, or I didn't know this is a new person who has no mobility. Okay, change that up. My mind is always plate spinning in terms of what's possible. And also sometimes it is about accepting it also, it doesn't go to plan and it might not have hit the marks that you wanted it to hit, mm-hmm. but something happens and somebody receives.
Yes.
You know, and people definitely do receive something transformative.
Yeah. So it doesn't.
Or tiring.
Tiring. Yeah. Yeah. Do you lie in a dark room afterwards? Like,
well, for them also. Yeah, yeah. For them as well. Well, yeah. It is. I have to say that I'm still learning as I carry on and continue. I'm still learning, and it's a gift to be able to connect with other artists to see what their practice is, and how our practices can inform one another, and so that's why it's continuously evolving. It started somewhere, and it's moving somewhere. You know, so.
Well, we're so thrilled to talk to you today, Edith, and we are crossing all of our fingers and toes that you'll be able to work with us with the Dementia Experience, that you will create some cool, cool, creative, colourful rooms with our members. It would just be absolutely fabulous.
Oh, you have no idea. I would love that. I would love that. Without having this, what you're creating here locally, because there's a big hole. There's a big hole. I was going to use cheesy business talk.
There's a big hole in the market.
I don't know that, but
I wouldn't know what that
dividends
meant.
Market. I don't know what's happening.
I know. You must have done your tax return recently. You've got all this grown-up lingo.
I don't know why. Yeah, no, but what you're doing is really incredible. And with such gusto, I can't believe it, you know. But I do hope this does really, to move forward and find something locally is a gift.
Yeah. Don't we? Thank you so much, Edith.
Absolute a real pleasure.
Oh,
real pleasure.
Lovely.